Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Geek Therapeutics Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Cornell Kritz, here with Alicia. And this week we have a very special guest in Charlene McPherson. And Alicia, how are you doing this week?
I mean, I'm doing great, still exhausted, still breathing, thankfully, and ready for May to get here so I can go on vacation, but I'm doing well.
Charlene, tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you to where you are today? What brought you to being a mental health expert and to Geek Therapeutics?
Okay, that's a big question. So psychology was interesting. That's how I started in the mental health field. I wanted to help people. So it just kind of made sense. In my undergrad, I got a BS in psychology. Didn't want to spend another 7 to 10 more years in school. So I went the social worker route, which was more experiential as well. I tend to be more of an experience learner. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot better for me. They did internships both years. Then I got my LG and then LC. So normal there. Been in the field for 12 years since then. So actually, as far as therapeutic game mastering, I started playing D&D in 2004 in college when I was a freshman, and played on and off since then. But I definitely had the idea around 2017 or 18. And I was like, hey, look, this is a lot of fun and it's very useful and it's social. Maybe I could use this for work. And at that time, of course, you know, it was a little bit too early for everybody to be out there. Geek Therapeutics, you know, Game to Grow and stuff like that. I think they had been, you know, they were there, but they weren't well known yet. And then I found in 2019, I applied for a job at a college. In the interview, I told them I wanted to run a D&D therapy group. It's like, this is what you're getting, like, for better or for worse. They agreed. And so I found the module that Take This actually did with Wizards of the Coast. Mm-hmm. It's the mist, the fogs in the mist or something like that. I can't remember what it is, what it's called, but used that campaign for my first group. It went really well. And now I'm here with 2 certifications as a therapeutic game master through Geek Therapeutics and Game to Grow.
That's awesome. Alicia.
Yeah, sorry. I was just listening and I'm excited to have another social worker, of course, on the pod. I love talking our profession and sometimes remember and often forget that not everybody knows the lingo. So pardon me if some crazy alphabet soup tangents. I will try very hard not to. With that being said, you said that in 2018, you brought this to an agency or to a college that you were, was it a school, a college?
A college in 2019. College. Yep.
So in 2019, you approach a college with this idea of, hey, I'm going to run D&D. What did that look like after they said, okay, and you started? What does it look like?
Yeah. So this college is a very small college and it is like super liberal arts. They study like Socrates and have to learn Greek and stuff like that. So and they have to define a number before they can actually use it. So very, very, you know, kind of really, you know, smart kind of, you know, really smart people. And they were already playing D&D. They already had a group on campus. And so my boss and my coworker were like, actually, that will fit our population quite well. And they had some trouble with people showing up to groups because, you know, as a college student, why are you going to show up to a group unless there's pizza? Which I did have on my first session, by the way. I made sure I had some pizza. So I went around and we advertised it to the kids on campus, the students on campus. And that was in the fall of 2019. So I got my group started and then COVID hit. Luckily, I have been playing on Roll20 for 4 or 5 years before that in a personal game. And so I knew how to use it. I knew how to get it all up and running and things like that. So I just got everybody up and running with Roll20, got it going, and it did fine. Everybody showed up over and over again. They loved it. So it definitely was a quick switch, but and I'm still running it there today at the college. I have once a week at the college and once a week in my private practice. So it's a lot of fun, and the students seem to enjoy it.
I love that. Is it recorded anywhere? Is it visible, or is it just between the group?
It's just between the group. Yeah, because of the confidentiality stuff, right? Sure. That makes it hard to market.
Yeah. So that is really hard to market. And it's a really good, segue into does and how we help individuals move into a space like you're trying to and have completed from 2019 until today. And I am wondering about your time here at Geek Therapeutics and what you've learned, what stuck out to you the most, what is the greatest thing that you have gained from being part of the community, and what programs have you, you know, contributed to, been part of, taken part in?
Yeah. So the training is amazing. The thing that I like to use CBT, sorry, let me back up. I like to use CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. I know that's an overarching, very overarching statement clinical wise, but research backed, right? That's what I tend to like to use. So going into a situation where there's no research backing up yet what's going on, especially since I work with adults. So the college kids are obviously 18 and up. My current group is, they're mostly in their 30s. So there's not a lot of research out there to pull up and show to somebody who's another professional, hey, look, this works. This is a proven thing, right? So I wanted to get the certifications to kind of join that community and know how to present it to people in a legitimate way, so that I wasn't just playing D&D, that I wasn't just doing this because it was fun. I wanted the theory base behind it to be able to talk to other professionals and say, hey, look, this is what we're learning. We're doing simulation training. We're doing social skills. We're doing, you know, we have cognitive behavioral goals that they're working on in group, you know, all of those things. I needed to have that. And the Geek Therapeutics training had it all, including down to documentation and how to document it, which, because documentation, I'm sure as a social worker, which, you know, is the worst.
Charlene just gave it the chef's kiss on the documentation.
A big thing too. Like you interject with, as a social worker, we know, because in reality, we don't teach documentation. No helping professions education at the bachelor's level, the grad school level, and even at your PhD or DSW, wherever you land in your academics, we do not teach the way to document. And to be as transparent here as possible, I am a trainer for Geek Therapeutics, and I train in the Therapeutic Game Master program. And that is something that I have taken pride in making sure that my students and all students moving forward know how to document, whether it be a clinical documentation or a non-clinical documentation, because we don't know how to document. I mean, I've been a social worker for years, and every time you go to a new agency, there's no standard. There's no standard for insurance. And anybody who's in the United States knows that if you're billing, what is the worst thing, Charlene, when you're having to build out a billing statement?
are they going to cover it? Are they going to, do they think it's legitimate enough?
Yes.
Are they going to deny you so you don't get paid? All that fun stuff.
Because of documentation.
Right. Exactly.
So, I mean, we could have a whole topic on documentation. So I will, you know, digress and give you back the floor. But I thought it was so nobody's brought up documentation yet in the podcast. So I'm excited. I'm very like, it's my thing. And so I'm so happy that you brought it up. Continue, please.
No, it's great because like, you know, I could come up with this stuff eventually. Right. You know, but having someone who's been doing it for 10 years and, you know, has done the legwork already, why reinvent the wheel? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm going to take that opportunity and use it. You know, it's as you get older as a social worker, too, that's the thing you learn. Like, do not reinvent the wheel. Just find somebody who's already done it and talk to them and get what they do and do that thing.
And that is the paragraph that should be on every syllabus for students. Yep. Find the aged social worker and just grab all their knowledge and do it that way. Oh, I love it. So documentation was a big thing for you. Was there anything else that grabbed you and made you feel at home here at Geek Therapeutics?
The Discord server is great. It's very active. So like talking to people on there is pretty nice. But also the cohort, just having, you know, other people that you're seeing every week, you know, and you're going through the same thing, you're going through the same trainings. The reason why I signed up was because we actually, not only were we playing D&D, but we played different games every other week. Different RPG systems, because that's something I'd like to kind of expand on in my practice, is not just using D&D, but just like the trainings say, like you want to be proficient with the game and understand it before you try and apply it. So just getting a taste of what games I may be interested in. Call of Cthulhu is actually one of my favorites personally. I was struggling a little bit with the therapeutic application. But we went through that. The person that taught us went through that. We did Call of Cthulhu. The person that went through it talked to us about it, talked to us about how you can adjust things to make it more therapeutic. There's some mechanics that are in that game that may not be the best words used. So figuring out how to present that to people, because the game is still valuable to be able to teach people things. So
I believe I really that was Dan that. Who ran your
I think so.
Yeah. Long hair, beard. He's fantastic at bringing the therapeutic nature of Call of Cthulhu as an immersion, being really good. He's really good at explaining it.
Yeah. And we were on there for an hour after the game, you know, just talking about it, because it was something, a game that I'm really interested in personally. I was like, how are you going to apply this with the mechanics that are already there? They're, you know, but it was a great explanation. And as far as the rest of the training, you know, the theory base, the ACT was something that, you know, as an older social worker, like I find people coming out with new theories of stuff that we're already doing. So like I already was doing ACT, but to have the theory base taught, right, really, really helps again to solidify this is what we're doing. This is a legitimate, we're using already research backed interventions. We're just doing it through D&D.
Yep.
So, man, there's so much that as research, there has been research. I just want to make it clear to our listeners. There has been decades of tabletop role playing research. It has just been very difficult to find. And because of that, when these types of new, unique, or eclectic, as we call them in social work, modalities come out, people tend to step back away from them because it doesn't feel right. It doesn't mm-hmm. feel like it is good or productive or going to be successful when working with a client. But there have been decades of research. Tabletop role-playing games have been utilized since post-war efforts yeah. in the 1920s. And I feel like this is a really great place for people to start to look out for those type of modalities if you're looking for new clinical practices or ways to reach your clients. So, Charlene, working with your population at college and colleges and you playing D&D, do you feel that their walls come down quicker and that the rapport between client and clinician is quicker versus what it could be in other clinical settings where things like tabletop role-playing games are not being utilized?
definitely is the short answer. So I have the kids at college, but I also have the adults in my outside practice as well, my private practice. And you can tell just from the email that people are sending to you asking for services. They're, oh, this was so neat. You know, this is great. You know, I had never seen something like this before. I'm super excited. Like in the email, they're a lot more emotive than what they are otherwise. Cause when you're trying to find a new therapist, it's like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, but the way I did mine was, number one, I have blue hair. I know you all can't see that, but number two,
this looks awesome.
Number two, I put on Psychology Today. I just put it out there. I was like, I'm a nerd. If you relate to your world via nerd or geek things, this is what I do. I also do therapeutically applied role playing games. And they just immediately that, like you said, that rapport is almost immediately there because, again, like anytime if you're in the gaming community, if you find someone else in the wild that like plays D&D or plays an RPG, it is almost like immediately that one of the barriers drops mm-hmm. because you know you have that in common with the other person and what it takes to play those games, like the role play and like knowing the rules and things like that. So you almost find like a kindred spirit, right? Immediately. And I've seen the progress as well when it comes to treatment. I know you were talking about rapport, but I always found it super frustrating to try and teach someone social skills one-on-one when people don't have social problems usually one-on-one. They have social problems when they're in a group. Trying to teach someone one-on-one what those social skills look like, how it may work, you know, things like that is, you can go over it, but it's not as good as someone sitting in a group and their therapist being at the head of the group, watching them socially interact in a safe space, knowing what their goals are. The client knows what their goals are, and the group knows a little bit about what, as they share with each other as much as they're comfortable, the group knows what everybody's goals are, right? So I'm literally watching the social, interaction. And so when I have somebody who's depressed or anxious or whatever, and they start saying, oh, this person, oh, I did something wrong. And they looked at me this way and, oh, I did it wrong. And it was so bad. And I'm like, okay, well, wait a minute. When was that? Because I was there and I didn't see that. Can you tell me more about that? Can you tell me, what instances you felt like, what signals, there were that something like that happened? And that's reality checking, right? Like we're going through and seeing what their perception was of the event rather than, what may have actually been going on, right? When you have anxiety and depression and things like that, it can be a little skewed. So I'm right there. I know what happened. I know the context. I know the tone. I know who it was, all of it. And it makes it a lot easier to just kind of reality check that perception. So I find that to be amazing because that's always been a frustration of mine, trying to teach somebody social skills one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. A point that you guys brought up earlier was how this is so new and that the research is there, but it's not well known. I actually personally in 1996 as a sixth grader had a school counselor give me a copy of Doom and told me to rename the villains in my head because I was having temper issues and issues with bullies and rename them to my bullies.
Nice.
And use that as a way to express that, that those strong emotions and stuff like that, that I was experiencing from my bullying. So it's been around a long time.
Yeah. And that's what I don't mean to say that there's no research out there. I know there's been a lot done with kids as well and veterans and, you know, things like that. I know there's more research coming out as well. I also was trying to look up just research for age 20 up on isolation and socialization and all of that. And I don't know about you all, but I haven't found anything.
Yeah, found it's really hard too. Oh yeah. It's so hard. And even more so in this, in our post COVID world. And I believe wholeheartedly in the next 5 years, we will see a slew of new data coming out due to the fact that all of a sudden the entire world for the first time in modern history experienced social isolation. And it is really going to reshape, I think, how we look at data and we look at peer-reviewed things and how we write them, because now there's this new scope and the scope is the whole world shut down. Mm-hmm. And how do you look at that? And how do you see how teenagers and 20 somethings and even adults are now bouncing back or not bouncing back from what happened? And I think it's going to really open things up, but things like Dungeons and Dragons and tabletop role-playing and video games really helped curb that due to things like Roll 20 and other tabletop VTTs and the PlayStation Network and Xbox and all those things that were able to formulate a space to connect during this time of isolation. So isolation is a really interesting topic, especially with what's going on in the world today.
I mean, we've seen video game sales just balloon.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was just hearing today or yesterday that Elden Ring, which is taking the market by storm worldwide, has sold over 12 million copies.
Wow.
And it's not an easy game, but because it just lets you explore its world, there's no hand holding that people are really just engaging with it just to experience that, you know, in a way, hopefully a healthy escape.
And I think to being in, I am 35. I don't mind saying that. That's absolutely fine. As a 35-year-old with a family, a kid, dogs, a house, you know, all of that there, as far as I know, unless you go through a tragedy, which is not something we want to wait for, there are support groups out there. There are groups for adults, but it's if there's a tragedy happening or, you know, so it's very reactive. And, you know, as a social worker, especially, like, we don't want to be reactive. We want to be proactive. We want to have the services out there already so that if you need them, then you can go access them. And again, number one, adults playing a game, that was always kind of the nerdy, you know, geeky side of that. Now it's getting a little bit more popularized. But as a therapist playing, that's even more unheard of, right? I'm playing a game with my clients and having fun at the same time. Yes. That is like a no-no for,
I mean, that's one of the largest taboos, especially. Yeah. And especially with the DSM and having this, you know, premature, unvetted, undocumented by peer-reviewed research, the thing that keeps us licensed, the WHO put in a very premature diagnosis of video game addiction, which we all know today is not accurate, does not have substantial claim, and nor does it meet the criteria for gambling or addiction or anything that comes into these taboo addictions. And then in 2020, the WHO told everybody to go buy video games and connect online because they had no way to connect. And so as a therapist and as a clinician, you doing that very thing breaks the mold of what a therapist is supposed to be when you're, you know, you're helping people overcome their their issues or concerns. And so I find it so interesting that we're in the space of geek culture as we're leveraging geek therapy, geek artifact, geekiness in a time where it's okay now to wear a t-shirt that says you like anime. It's okay now to be 25 and 35 and 45 collecting Pokemon on a walk because they added exercise. And it's okay for adults to finally say, oh yeah, I play D&D once a week. And it's the one time that I get to connect with my friends in a fantastical space and not get beat up, thrown in the trash can, or told that you're going to hell because you are playing with Satan. And so it's a really unique time to be a therapist. I think to be a clinician, I'm not a clinician, but I work in clinical spaces. And so I find it to be a very interesting time to be able to emote all of these things in a way that everybody's watching Stranger Things. And so it's not like we're all getting yelled at or we're actively talking about Bridgerton all the time. And those are weird things to most people. So I find it, I love it that you are that, what we call in social work, eclectic, eclectic clinician.
See, I've always liked that title of being eclectic. It's
well, and that's,
Me, that's a good thing. It always has been my entire life.
Not in our world. It's not. It gets you blacklisted very quickly. And I'm known in my world to be an eclectic social worker. And people don't like it because I don't like to prescribe to things that say I'm supposed to do them. Because there are other ways to social work and far more effective ways, like playing D&D or other tabletop role playing games.
That's right.
Is there anything that you are doing outside of your college clients and what you're doing with schools? Are you working in other spaces, volunteering, using this?
Yeah. So I have my own private practice called Nerd Adventure Therapy 20.
I love that.
It's an LLC. And the best part, which I didn't do this on purpose, it just kind of happened. And I sent it to my personal D&D group. They're like, you need to add a 20 on the end. It's Nerd Adventure Therapy. So it's N-A-T 20.
Nat 20. I love it.
Nat 20 is the, I was like, oh yeah, I didn't do that on purpose, but of course I'm going to put a 20 at the end of it. So that's the abbreviation. I'm here in BWI area in Maryland, out of my office, which I always like to kind of preface this. Before people get there, it's in my church that I go to, but the pastor was like, hey, do you want to do that here? I'm like, wow. Yes, please. So very, very forward thinking type of place. Right.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And so it's right down the street from my house, which makes it great. Nice and close. But that's my older group. Right. So that's my 30-year-old group. And when I started it, I've been doing individual therapy in my own private practice since 2014. But I added the groups last year. Right. I didn't know exactly how I was going to do all this. You know, I went through some of the trainings trying to do the best I could. Right. But it kind of comes out as you go. And I realized for my population that doing a social skills group was good instead of a therapy group necessarily, because then I would see those people in individual therapy and process what happens in the group in individual therapy. So when I bring people on for the group, I tend to say, hey, look, I highly recommend doing individual therapy with me or another therapist so that you can process what's happening in group. Because it's, for me, at least with a small attention span and ADHD, a 90-minute session of D&D and being a therapist and working on goals and stuff like that is enough. Trying to process then right afterwards would be, I think, a little bit too much for me. So being able to take that time individually and work on their characters and where they're going and things like that, I found it to be really, really helpful.
Man, I just want to talk about, I could just spend an entire hour with you talking about how your clients are reacting and how things are going on with the characters and the processing. Cause it's fascinating to me. it's probably one of the quickest therapeutic processes I've ever experienced and seen. Mm-hmm. And I can just talk to you about it forever, because I think it's important for people to see that you're connecting with people in, I mean, grown men who are told that you can't do play therapy. You're too old to play. You're too old to use your imagination. And they're processing, they're learning, they're exploring, they're finding their identities, whatever is going on in those encounters. They're processing through those things, and they're probably processing some really deep stuff based on what I've done with my own population. And it's amazing. And I find it even more amazing that you practice out of your church, because that just shows that people really are willing to listen, and the whole satanic panic is moving, and people don't see it as this horrible experience anymore where you're, you know, playing with the devil. And so,
yeah, no, we tend to be pretty progressive. So
I love that's good. That just makes it that much more encouraging that there are religious establishments and churches that are moving towards that progressive nature. The ones that I usually hear about are the universalist Unitarians that are usually very progressive and very welcoming of this new style. So
yeah, we're Eastern Lutheran. So the East Coast Lutheran, ELCA.
I
tend to be pretty.
Yeah. I went to Bill's High School.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can still find people who are Lutheran that are super conservative, but at least, and that's the reason why I go to this church, is because it's progressive. It's accepting. We have multiple LGBTQ plus people on staff as clergy, you know, all those things. So it's a really supportive environment. And that's personally something that I also kind of champion, as well, as that, you know, all religious institutions aren't necessarily the ones who are trying to tell you you're going to hell just for thinking things. Sure. But yeah, so back to like the client work, though, like this group I started back in June, and they're still with me today. They keep signing up for sessions over and over and over again. And part of them, one of the person was like, we can't quit until we know what happens, because the story, I've kind of taken the story and, you know, integrated a whole bunch of stuff into it. But one of the one things that I really enjoyed seeing was, you know, somebody who has social anxiety, right? Number one, you're sitting at a table of strangers playing a game that maybe you don't know, you might be new to it, and you're working on your clinical goals at the same time. So just sitting at the table is an accomplishment within itself, let alone what kind of player, what kind of character you play. So I had somebody who played a deposed entitled king who was socially anxious. And so they had to advocate for themselves all the time, that this king wants what he wants and he wants it now. Right. Which is the complete opposite of what, you know, is going on in social anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it was amazing. It's amazing to see people work through those things. Another ADHD client. You always get told, as a person with ADHD, you always get told, oh, we don't do it that way. That's not the process. You have to follow the rules. You have to do it this way. Right. Whereas in D&D, you don't. And the more creative you are, the more reinforced you are. Right. So we're talking about operant conditioning. Right. Like the more you do, the more creative you are, the more I reinforce you. So you. This person's jumping off walls and riding spiders and had never played the game before, but was able to use that, you know, that ADHD as a superpower instead of, you know, being told, no, that's not how we do it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's amazing. It's just amazing to watch trauma work. And I'm sure with veterans, you know, you're very familiar with that. Obviously we don't recreate the trauma, but you know, working through, combat encounters and working with a team and, you know, all those different kind of things. It's had somebody that was very independent due to trauma. And the fact that they had to depend on someone else to heal them was a revelation. And letting that happen and practicing that and things like that. So you can get so much from each one of these, you know, each one of those diagnoses are completely different, but their goals are being reinforced in D&D as long as you're doing it, you know, purposefully.
I love that. So many people, it's so awesome to be able to talk to somebody who is watching this and doing it and seeing the growth, because it sounds weird. It looks weird when you see it on Facebook or you see it come across your email or you have somebody say, hey, do you know what it means to be a geek therapist? Do you know what tabletop role playing is in therapy? And they're like, deer in the headlights. No, weird. What? But then you just make it sound and feel so tangible and real. And like right now, I just want to roll some dice and process. Like,
exactly.
It's amazing. It warms my soul. It makes my armpits sweaty because I'm so excited that wherever you live in this country, men, women, and children are being amazing adventurers and processing through some deep stuff together. And I love it. I don't got much more to say because I could talk about this forever and ever. And I know that it's not just a D&D podcast. So are you going to any of your like university conventions or your like NASW and being able to talk about this?
So not quite yet. I put in an application to be a presenter at the NASW Maryland chapter, whatever they're doing. I haven't heard anything because I just don't think anything's happening yet, to be honest. Everybody's just now getting back into everything because, you know, of Omicron and everything. So I haven't been presenting there, but outside of I've had somebody approach me to do a book. I was like, I've literally been doing this for 6 months. I mean, I've been doing the game since like 2019, but in my own private practice for six, I was like, I've been Geek Therapeutics was kind enough to allow me to be on a panel, a virtual panel that they were doing. And that was amazing. And I'm in the process of getting together some presentations for the public library system in Maryland, in Anne Arundel County, to do some presentations on D&D and mental health and how they intersect. So there are opportunities everywhere. You just have to find them. I also, the way I kind of did this a little bit differently was I connected with other therapists. You kind of have to do that to get referrals, but I also connected with the three major gaming stores in the area. And so they know my name, they know my face, they know what I'm doing. And so when somebody comes in or if they think about it, they're handing out business cards. They're, you know, saying, hey, look, you should go, you know, find this person who's doing this thing. And they're handing out my flyers during events. So it's really, really supportive. The community, the gaming community is supportive. I haven't really had too much interaction with, you know, the NASW and stuff like that when it comes to this stuff yet. But we'll see.
I want to have all the interactions with them. And I wait with, you know, bated breath because I know that it's not going to be the easiest as there's so much going on right now and the change is hard and people don't want to accept things as moving forward. And so I know that I want to see a change. I want to see more panel discussions. I want to see hardcore conversations about growth and change because we haven't seen new modalities in helping professions in years because people look at EMDR as one of the newest modalities and think it's crazy and call it quack medicine. So like when which I love EMDR, saved my life.
It works.
Yeah.
It's like the gold standard.
Oh my God, it's so great. And when the VA, when I was provided it by the VA, or maybe it was actually another service organization, regardless, my EMDR therapist saved my life and she will
forever be the person who pushed me to become a clinician and to move me into clinical spaces, and is probably why I will sit, because EMDR is a weird modality that people think is crazy, and it works just like tabletop role playing and other gaming places and gamification and therapy, like video games. And so, yeah, it's, man, I want to hear those conversations. I want to be a part of those conversations. Let's make those conversations happen, Charlene.
I'm working as hard as I can. I actually am part of, in the Maryland area, there's a Facebook group of clinicians, just clinicians, so that we can look for referrals and things like that. And I put my first flyer up there, not knowing what kind of response I was going to get. And I was like, okay, let's see how this goes. And I had like over 300 likes on the flyer. I had people asking what it was. Tell me more about it. I want to meet you. Can we meet up? Like all sorts of support from this community. And it really gave me the confidence to continue and expand and do what I needed to do to get it up off the ground. So as far as my personal experience with other clinicians, it's been nothing but support. I guess I'm just lucky that way. But I know once I get out into the more wider professional, you know, areas, it's going to be a little bit more difficult.
Well, let's team up. I'll be in the area soon. So let's team up. Let's really make those changes. I'd really like to see. And if anybody at NASW is listening, I would really like to see at conference next year, an entire panel discussion on therapeutic gaming, gamification in therapeutic spaces, and how things like tabletop role playing can effectively encourage adults to process, socialize, and be part of greater groups outside of themselves. And so I want to, let's do it.
I'm there. You call me, I'm there. And that's the thing is like, you know, obviously gaming and video games and things like that, you know, we're a little bit more accepting when it comes to kids, right? Because they're kids. So that's how they learn. And I'm like, that's why I started trying to look up how adults learn, how adults socialize, how adults stay, you know, away from isolation, because it's like there's no research on that. There's no research, at least, again, from what I have access to, which is just public, basically. No one cares. And then you add gaming to it and it's just completely out the window. Adults don't play, right?
But we do. And we're just scared to talk about it, people.
Except not me. Me either.
Me either. Cornell plays video games on, he streams. So none of us here are afraid to say.
Right, exactly.
But
I know people. I know people who are too shy to come out and say, hey, I play D&D. Meanwhile, I'm the one walking around with a shirt that has some sort of like obscure D&D reference on it, so that I know when the person who gets it, that they are also a kindred spirit who plays D&D. But there are people out there that are there is still stigma surrounding gaming and mental health in general, let alone trying to use gaming for mental health. And that's part of the reason why, too. Obviously, I was part of the gaming community before I became a therapist. And I think everyone in the gaming community knows, or at least it makes sense, that people use it as a therapeutic tool already. They know people who have processed through stuff through their characters. They know people who have coped with things through their video games. And so it's like, it just makes sense to us, right? Because we're part of the community. And I wanted to somehow reduce the stigma of reaching out for mental health services within the gaming community. And I thought that this is a great way to do that, because people are already doing it. They already know the therapeutic value as a gamer. And so, okay, let's make it fun and easy to get into mental health care when it's a real pain in the butt otherwise to try and get.
Yeah, man. I have lots of words about that. And it breaks my heart because it shouldn't be hard to get. It shouldn't be, we shouldn't have this struggle to enter that barrier and to get people the services they need. Our bodies, we make people go to the doctor for far lesser things, and we don't treat our brain, which is the largest working muscle, which is working 24/7. We don't treat it as a part of our body. We treat it as weakness. And I mean, in my population, it's awful. So it makes me just for everybody else.
Yeah. And it's hard too, as a therapist, to reach the people that you'd like to reach. Cause it's kind of broken on both sides, right? Like you have it broken when you're the one, the client trying to access it, and then having a therapist trying to earn a livable wage while you're doing therapy and not seeing 50 to 100 clients a week, you know, that's hard too. So the whole system is just, it just butts heads. It makes everything a lot harder to access than it should be.
Agreed. Charlene, you've been so awesome. I could talk to you all day, and I hope that we can continue these conversations in the future. Before we say goodbye, we want to give you the opportunity to plug anything and everything that you are working on that you want people to know. Please plug it now so we can get people engaged with you and your services or the university or program. So Charlene, you have the floor.
I do have a podcast. It's called Mental Health Quest, The Therapist's Office and Beyond. And what we do is we actually cover just accessing mental health care, just like we were just saying, you know, how to do that, how to find a therapist. We're currently in our diagnoses section that we're talking about. We've covered depression, anxiety, PTSD, and we're bringing on experts in that area. We actually had Dr. Scarlett come on, who's the like foremost like superhero therapist. On our PTSD episode, isn't released yet, so you're welcome.
I love it.
That's awesome.
but we have experts on to kind of talk about, you know, kind of what they've seen. And it's very conversational and it's very down to earth, like two people who are friends talking about it instead of two clinicians using all the acronyms and, you know, things that nobody understands. Right. Because again, I think that's another stigma and barrier to mental health services when you're just not presenting it in a way that's actually understandable. So we're doing that. We're also going to do a treatment series as well. So like, we're going through the diagnoses now and mentioning the treatments. We're going to go further into treatments later on. So that's exciting. You can find me on Facebook at Nat20 Therapy. You can find me on Twitter at Nat20 Therapy. You can also find me on TikTok at True Form Unseen. I am trying to work that space as well, and I'm going to have a website soon. It should be up by the end of this week. And it is nat20therapy.com. And I think that's it.
I love it. I will make sure to get the, way to spell those things out, and we will put them in the, description of this week's show so you guys can find Charlene and all the great work that she, oh my, that she is doing. Pardon me, I'm going to choke
up. It's so good.
It's so inspirational. It actually is really inspirational as I'm choking on my boba tea pearls. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to thank you all for being here. Charlene, you are awesome. We'll make sure to get all that stuff out. Yeah. I will give another shameless plug every week until PAX. If you are in the Boston area or you are flying from anywhere around the country or the world and are attending PAX East, please be sure to come find Geek Therapeutics. I will be there. Cornell will be there. A good team of Geek Therapeutics staff will be there on the expo floor sharing all things. Charlene, you going to be there too?
Yes.
We are going to be at PAX East sharing all the geeky therapeutic things. We've got some really awesome swag coming in. We are we have a whole group of books that you can find, like the therapy and cultural geek culture and therapeutic practices. We have some psychology of Zelda, psychology of Final Fantasy. There may or may not be a psychology of Pokemon book there. I don't know if it's being delivered yet. But I don't know. I know that we have lots of books out. We also have some really cool dice. We have a really great Dungeon Master kit for individuals who are looking to get into therapeutic DMing and having all of your tools needed, to include a really awesome Dungeon Master journal that is built for clinicians. It helps you keep track of all those things that we talked about earlier in documentation, and to help you really categorize what you need to do. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it back over to Cornell, and I'm going to say goodbye. And thank you for listening to another awesome episode of the Geek Therapeutics podcast. Take it away.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's episode. We will see you same time, same channel next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.